Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. I have got a great guest for you this week. I know I say that every week, but it really is true this time. With me today is Reason Magazine senior editor, Robbie Suave. Robbie, thanks so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. This is your second appearance. I've only had a few people on two times, but you'll be the latest addition to that list. I know, a big honor. But I asked you to come on today because I want to talk about something you've been writing about for years now, which is higher education and the way it's kind of most college campuses, not all, but most, have been captured by very far left policies and voices and ideologies, and the way that that is manifesting itself now, interestingly, in the COVID era as students return to campus. So I guess just to set us up a little bit, how has, right, we just started a fall semester. My sister's college age, she just went back to school. How has the transition to campus life again with the Delta variant, how has it gone in broad strokes?
Yeah, I mean, I think campuses, college campuses could have been at the forefront of a sort of return to normal, even despite the Delta variant, because they have a young, the population, the people on campus skews younger than the general, you know, population of the country. That's a big thing. And also, importantly, on many university campuses, particularly elite liberal arts colleges, the very prestigious universities, coastal universities, they are requiring vaccination of students and in many cases of staff. So you have a situation where the overwhelming majority of people coming back to these campuses are pretty safe from negative health outcomes associated with the coronavirus. And yet, these campuses are implementing policies that are far more restrictive. They're the most restrictive policies you would find anywhere on like planet Earth. They are requiring masking indoors and outdoors. They are saying don't socialize, don't eat in the cafeteria, don't eat at all. They don't want you to leave campus. They want you to be alone by yourself in two layers of masks, not doing anything normal or human. You know, despite the fact that they're not seeing any, they're not seeing deaths, they're not seeing very serious hospitalizations because people are pretty safe.
Yeah, I guess give us the rationale that they're thinking, right? The steel man of what these administrators are saying, what these students are demanding. Why are they taking such strict restrictions? Is it to protect unvaccinated members of the community? Is it to protect like workers or employees who maybe are older or at risk? What would they say their biggest reasoning is?
I think it's a team blue signaling thing. Because of the tribal nature of the COVID response, right? Good, responsible, liberal, Trump, anti-Trump people, you know, wear their mask even when they're outside in public and do everything health authorities want, you know, to the T, and then some. That's the interesting thing here, right? They're following measures that actually go well beyond even what the Centers for Disease Control recommend in many cases. But it's like a way of signaling that you're on the right side, that you're taking COVID really seriously, more seriously than you need to. We have to have cases at absolute zero before anyone can go back to normal life. That's what they're practicing. It doesn't make any sense, and it's impossible to defend. Also, they can just, you know, it doesn't harm the administrators, I guess, to tell the students they're not allowed to make new friends or go out or have fun, right? It's only at the students' expense. And parents have shown that they're willing to pay, you know, whatever amount of money tuition costs for that rubber stamp at the end of their 4 years, your, you know, certificate of I can be hired now, or at least that's the kind of myth built around the college diploma.
Yeah, and people will do it because unfortunately they need it for a lot of the jobs. Now, whether they should need it, probably not in many cases, but that's a whole nother conversation. One thing I'm wondering about is in your reporting on this, it seems like some of the Ivy League campuses have gone the most nuts. So can you tell us what's happening at Brown and some of these other places specifically in terms of their over-the-top COVID stuff?
Yeah, it's really pretty crazy stuff. Columbia College reprogrammed students' key cards, so they'll only access the dorm, the residence hall that you live in, so you couldn't go visit any of your friends. Brown told kids eat outside. All the cafeterias are being shut down left and right, so forget about even just like eating in the cafeteria. You're supposed to eat by yourself in your room and not see anyone. Maybe you could eat outside. Maybe you could see one other person, but you're still supposed to, you know, put your mask back on in between bites and in between sips of water. One college, I think it was the University of Southern California Law School, told students, you have to be masked in class. And if you're thirsty during class, they don't even want to take you to take your mask down for a brief second to take a sip of water. Please go out, not into the hall, but outside, physically outdoors to do that. I mean, this is pretty hysterical. This is they're all vaccinated. We're talking about people who are 95% vaccination rate. It's really, really excessive. And this is what, you know, this is what the serious minded, you know, brilliant minds at places like Harvard and Yale and Columbia and Brown are recommending.
Yeah, it just boggles the mind because these are the same institutions and people that tell us to follow the science and listen to the experts, yet they're doing things that have no basis in science, like outdoor mask mandates or closing down gyms and gatherings for fully vaccinated groups of people. I mean, the college age demographic is a demographic that, with rare exceptions, such as those with pre-existing autoimmune conditions, right, they were at like statistically pretty negligible risk of death or hospitalization from COVID-19 in the first place, before the vaccines. Now we have these safe and effective vaccines that all but nix the possibility of death or hospitalization from COVID. And from what I can see, most or at least many campuses have required vaccination for on-person, on-campus students to attend. So there literally seems like there is statistically close to zero risk on these campuses. Is no one pointing that out?
Yeah, you know, it does not look to me like the students are rebelling against this regime. I mean, you can imagine a universe where they do, right? A very elite college campuses have very active, politically engaged student bodies that often protest injustice, get, you know, very worked up about things. They oftentimes get worked up about things that don't even directly kind of relate to their own student experience, you know, about loftier sort of global issues, right? So you could imagine them getting upset and wanting to protest this or fight this. As best I can tell, there's plenty of like flouting it going on by, you know, students who actually quite reasonably want to see their friends, want to have a little bit of fun every now and then. But then there's also just as many students who are militantly in favor of enforcing the rules or even making them stricter and are snitching or, you know, telling on their reporting their classmates. It is kind of like Orwellian kind of metaphors are often overused, but there is something like Orwellian here. And they're like, you know, please report your neighbors and friends for being bad citizens of our campus, you know, to the authorities and get them in trouble. That's not a healthy way to kind of social norm to establish for a group of people. And again, it's totally unnecessary. Vaccinated, and they're being tested, and they're being masked, and they're being socially distanced. It's everything. It's every mitigation effort there is. You don't need to do that many things. No one recommends that. No one says you have to, and yet they're doing it.
Yeah, one example that you wrote about that I think is the most insane case I've seen yet is Oberlin College. Tell us about the near universal mask mandate they just put in place.
Yeah. They said masking indoors and outdoors, masking at all times. You know, they sounded like they don't even want you to, like, they come across as, how should I say this, as frustrated by the fact that human beings have to consume food, so you have to lower your mask at some point to eat food. But there are no exceptions for this mask mandate, except when you're alone in your own dorm room. There was no exception for, like, showering, even. I don't know, like, these rules are getting very, and sometimes these rules are very complicated, right? Where they're like, well, if there's four people and you're outside and it's sunny out and between the hours of 4 and 7:30, then it's okay to talk for 5 minutes. One campus or the other said, you can hang out with up to five people, but you shouldn't be jumping different social cliques. You should just hang out with those five people. Like, this is just completely ignoring how, like, the normal human experience. It's like wildly impractical. And so my worry is that these students who are really being unfairly treated under who are suffering under this regime, but some of them are then going to like leave campus, they're going to graduate and think that this is normal and this is the way the rest of the country should be. And like that is literally terrifying because I already think the rules are too tyrannical with when it comes to COVID safety. Everyone should get vaccinated. I'm vaccinated and I've already had it. So I am not at risk and I'm not putting anyone else at risk, especially outside where, you know, in Washington, D.C., still like probably a third of people I see on the street are wearing masks to walk around by themselves, which is their choice. It's fine. But I don't want that forced on me or anyone else. And I'm worried that we're going to move back in that direction because of just how like unthinkingly insane these norms are.
Yeah, I think it's and I don't say this to be over the top, but it's a little cult-like. It's a little bit like they're signaling. I'm wearing a mask outside because I believe in science, TM, which doesn't actually mean like infectious disease science because COVID doesn't spread outdoors, especially not just from walking by from someone. But what they're really saying is they signal that we believe in Dr. Fauci, not Donald Trump. Right. And it's just become a stand-in for this political thing. My sense, though, on campuses, I think you're right to be worried about this dangerous safetyism, and kind of acquiescence to authoritarianism really creeping off college campuses. Because I remember, you know, 5 years ago, people used to look at the woke insanity on campus and say, hey, it's just campuses, right? But we've really seen it percolate from campuses to big business, to big media, to the federal government, all the places where college graduates tend to go and work. They're bringing some of this ideology with them. So I think you're right to be concerned. I do wonder, though, my sense of college students, my sister's in college, I have a lot of younger followers, is that there's a lot of casual non-compliance with these rules. But I guess it's like, if young people living under this kind of like medical authoritarianism state on campus, right, where it's like, oh, are you standing next to the wrong person? Or did you take your mask off too long to take a sip of water in class? If they can't realize then the importance of civil liberties and freedom, can they ever really realize it?
Yeah, that's the concern. I mean, what happened to the healthy distrust of the government, of the authorities that you're supposed to have if you're a progressive person? The government, the authorities get things wrong. I mean, I, as a libertarian, I have a really vast, you know, distrust, maybe a beyond healthy distrust of the authority figures, but everyone should be a little skeptical of the authorities. And I don't know how anyone, having gone through the last 2 years we've gone through, could have come away with it having like greater trust in the authorities, in the experts, in the like the health bureaucratic state, because they've gotten so many things wrong time and time again. Everything from, you know, from just horrible mistakes like the FDA screwing up the testing at the very beginning to Dr. Fauci's actual things he said that were wrong, that he says he said he knew they were wrong when he said them, about like the herd immunity threshold and a couple other things. So they, even, you know, with booster shot approval right now, I'm reading a lot like in the New York Times, which has been dreadful on COVID in general, but reading, you know, about how the experts saying, well, there's no scientific rationale for booster shots. And then when you're looking at what they're actually saying, they're saying, well, it might do a little bit of help, but is that really how we should spend our vaccines? And like a bunch of other things. Like, no. Just tell me, I just want to know the science of the booster shot. I don't want you to try to like play political scientist or economist or like resource allocations expert, right? There's all the sort of, or like the CDC deciding whether we should have an eviction moratorium. Like that, how is that your territory? So the vast overreach of the health bureaucratic state has left me quite terrified. There's so much of this, you know, we're like 20 years out of past 9/11 now, and thinking about all the national security measures that stayed in place, that, you know, we still take off our belts and our shoes to board a plane, even though that doesn't make us safer whatsoever. And there's no, you know, legitimate rationale for it. So that's what we have to be worried about, that we'll still be wearing masks. Some people will still feel that they have to, or be explicitly required by a campus authority or a local authority or someone else, that you have to wear a mask walking around outside, when we know there is no legitimate medical necessity of that.
Now, Robbie, you're going to trigger the TSA again. They're going to come for you. If you tell us that story. Sorry, guys, for this total tangent. What happened where the TSA verified Twitter account came for you?
I don't even remember what you're talking about. What happened to me?
Didn't you say something about the TSA on CNN?
Oh, yeah, I did. Oh, yeah. Well, I criticized. I said it just what I'm telling you now on CNN. Yes, I did have some TSA account yelling at me. I might have been the TSA associated with Florida. It was pretty... Frankly, Brad, I've had so many attacks recently that I even recall what they said. People got mad at me for counting. I did a little experiment. I wanted to count how many people are walking around wearing masks still on the streets of D.C. So I like counted how many people I saw in masks and how many people I saw not masked. And there was a lot of people in masks, again, outside by themselves, no bigness. Reason to do it. And I just tweeted that observation. And, you know, you'd think I had threatened to like murder children. I was just like inundated with hate, with like death threats over this.
You have this penchant, and I think it's because your main beat areas have kind of an interesting cross section of followers that includes people left of center. But you have this like interesting penchant for accidentally being a polemicist, where you just like tweet something that isn't very controversial sounding and is very nonchalant, and then everyone just gets furious about it, which is just funny because it's like, I've had those moments, but generally when I like knew I was dropping a bomb, like when I tweeted that Harry Styles isn't cute and got 16,000 replies, I knew what I was doing.
Yeah. Well, I have a lot of very left followers and a lot of very right to the right followers, and the interesting thing with that, with COVID stuff, is that Twitter seems to be very, if you're on Twitter and you're very far to the right, you tend to be very anti-vaccine. And if you're on Twitter and you're very to the left, you tend to be very pro-mask. So anti-vaccine pro-mask is where you want to be on Twitter. And I'm pro-vaccine and anti-mask. So I think that's why I get the attack. But I don't know. I mean, I think that's the correct place to be if you're like a reasonable person, you know, who wants to do reasonable efforts to protect yourself and other people and not do stupid, pointless, authoritarian stuff.
Yeah, it is definitely interesting. I've taken a similar position, but I do want to go back to campus for a minute because we were talking about the, overreach of the medical state and the bureaucracy and all of this. And what is so interesting to me is that some people might look at the college campuses and the stuff you're reporting on and say, oh, they're going way overboard, but you know, better safe than sorry. I think there's actually a case to be made, and I'm curious for your thoughts, that because college students were at such minimal risk to begin with and are now almost all vaccinated on these campuses, that these public health measures, in air quotes, are actively a net harm to public health on these campuses, right? Like the gyms are closed. You are isolating people, fueling their mental health problems, probably fueling more people to drop out. I know several 19-year-olds who went to 1 year of college and then it was terrible and COVID and nothing and they didn't like it and they didn't go back. I would bet that between, you know, taking away people's ability to like eat a lot of options and just they have to eat whatever takeout in their dorm room or they have to wear a mask on the treadmill. Like these things are going to have negative health consequences on non-COVID related things from mental health to physical. I mean, do you think I'm onto something there and that these could end up being a big net negative to public health?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's my sense with the mental health stuff. We obviously are going to have to wait for more data to come in to see if it supports the theory that, you know, this is having a very bad I think there's preliminary reason to think that, but I want to wait longer in fairness to find out. But I suspect it's having a crippling effect on people's mental health. For the physical health, it's quite obvious. I mean, Stanford, I saw just this guidance from Stanford. They said we will close the indoor basketball courts if people are not wearing masks. You have to wear a mask while you're playing basketball. Basketball is a pretty intensive sport to be playing indoors while wearing a mask. But they said if it's too much, maybe you should exercise less intensely. Which is there's no doubt that you are putting people, you know, in some greater risk of a bad health outcome if you're telling them to exercise less because wearing masks is that important. I mean, that's just like utterly unscientific for young people. So yes, there's And again, there's no risk to this population of vaccinated young people. If you happen to be, you know, one of the very small number of people who have some kind of underlying condition where you couldn't get vaccinated, or you have a very bad immune system, there's nothing to prevent you from continuing to wear a mask, a very good mask, take whatever other precautions that you think are necessary. That is absolutely fine, but we should be getting past the point where, you know, for the exceptions needs to be the rule for everyone. Like, that just doesn't make sense anymore.
Yeah, I mean, those same people are at risk from the flu, and we don't shut down our life every winter over that. And the basketball example, that is mind-boggling to me as somebody who played high school basketball, right? You're doing sprints. I can't wear one while exercising. There's no reason to wear one. And what is so hilarious to me about this, it's not hilarious, it's actually sad and grotesque, but there is something funny about it because of how ironic it is that obesity is a COVID, you know, death factor, mm-hmm. right? It makes you much more likely to be seriously ill or die of COVID if you are obese. Yet we're telling people to exercise less vigorously to protect them from COVID. This doesn't make any sense. And I just wonder, like, is it too politicized for people to actually, like, reflect on it and say, that didn't work, or this isn't working, right? In the sense of things like lockdowns that really don't seem to have correlated with better outcomes. Other things, are we past the point? Are we just too polarized and too tribalized to actually just look at something that's obviously not working, take in the data, and change our views? Or is this just going to be an ideological thing where far left people will keep doing their thing and far right people will keep, you know, burning their masks and not taking the vax?
Unfortunately, I think that is the case. I think it was supposed to be, right? This was part of the reason to get vaccinated. Part of the case was supposed to be so that you could stop doing these other things, right? And that was a message I absolutely supported. We can Same. Get rid of the other restrictions. You don't have to wear your mask anymore. You don't have to socially distance if you get vaccinated. And that was part of the pitch to people who weren't, you know, particularly at risk of COVID, but, you know, we want to encourage them to get vaccinated anyway so that they don't get it and then spread it to someone else, even if they were going to be fine in all likelihood. But, you know, we do want to decrease cases overall. Not to the point of making people sad and fat because they can't exercise or eat or do anything with their friends, but we want to encourage people to get vaccinated. So but even that, like, Biden's, you know, federal mandate that for the 80 million private sector workers requiring them to get vaccinated, a mandate I oppose on several different grounds. It would still make sense if you're going to do that mandate, shouldn't you couple it with relaxing of restrictions? But in his plan, in the health orders, he talks about how we need to have masking in place just as vigorously and social distancing, et cetera. That it's just, how could, I understand why people think it's all some kind of just like scam to run their lives forever, and they become distrustful because these people are hard to trust because they've shifted the goalpost. I thought we were only going to do this stuff for 2 weeks. Then it was, we're going to do it until we have a vaccine. Then it's, we're going to do it until everyone has the ability to get the vaccine. Well, now we're months past that part and we're still doing all this stuff.
Yeah, I guess one thing though that I am interested, because you have an upcoming book about big tech. I will be crashing your book party next week, though I guess it's not crashing since I was invited. But anyway, I'm going to have you on again to talk about your book specifically and big tech regulation. But I do want to touch on this angle of this COVID, you know, security state dystopia. In other parts of the world, and I think on college campuses a bit, it's becoming a bit interlinked with the tech issue and with social media issue and like geo-tracking. What have you seen in terms of college campuses, you know, utilizing technology in a little bit of an Orwellian manner to track people? Is that going on there, or is that just happening, you know, abroad?
No, it is happening. Campuses are establishing a pretty worrisome kind of surveillance routine. I think it's right now still operating at a level of not particularly technologically sophisticated, you know, apps that you have to, you know, have on your phone that will, and you'll have to check boxes that, oh, I wasn't near someone who's tested positive, and oh, I'm wearing a mask, you know, that kind of thing. I could see how it could be used for something more more nefarious. Certainly, I think there's every reason to be concerned about it. I don't think that the technology is necessarily the culprit. This technology could, you know, probably be used for for good things too, but it's the fact that it's the tool, but the authorities want this, people in the media, so there's a lot of, you know, complaining about big tech and social media and how it's handled the pandemic and how I think it's recycled some of the administration's talking points, done its bidding. But of course, this has been forced on it by the government and has been pushed on it by the New York Times and you know, mainstream media voices. So I tend to be more critical of all those. At least you can still have some kind of debate. I mean, in some sense, we're having a discussion of another perspective on these ideas made possible by social media. So I don't see tech and social media they can be part of the problem, but they can also be part of the solution to these issues.
Yeah, I mean, you look at some place like China that really is dystopian and how they use tech and with their social credit score and all these things. But like, the tech isn't the problem. It's right. Just, it's a tool. I mean, we have the same tech here and don't use it for that. I do think, though, and I'm curious for your thoughts on this, when I talk to Gen Z people and college students, they don't value digital privacy. They're pretty comfortable with, like, these people grew up with iPads increasingly. We're getting in deeper and deeper into Gen Z. How do we convince people that, like, they actually should care about their privacy and they shouldn't necessarily be so quick to, like, you know, accept geo-tracking from the university or whatever? Or is that just a ship that's already sailed?
I mean, they'll value it 10 years from now when they get fired from the new job they wanted because, like, their techs, their embarrassing texts from a decade ago came out, right? They will eventually value it. They just don't value it right now. I don't know. I don't know how to fix that issue, how to make them care more about it. But they will care more about it. This genie cannot be put back in any bottle, right? We can't de-escalate people's interest and reliance on tech. All we can do is try to develop better norms of social interaction, of human interaction, of how we treat each other people, treat each other and treat other people. So we don't, I guess, capitalize on people's addiction to tech in a way that damages them. But that, again, that's on us to do it. It's not the technology. The technology doesn't have any agenda. It's just us.
Yeah. One thing to kind of close out the campus discussion that I do wonder, how much of a hive mind is this? Or have you seen any campuses that are absolutely not doing this, right? That are going back to normal defiantly so? I mean, I don't know what Hillsdale's doing. I don't know what Liberty is doing, but I'm not even just talking about like conservative capital C colleges, right? But are there any ones that are bucking this trend, or is it like basically all one way?
Well, let's keep in mind, you know, some institutions like Liberty University, and I don't know their specific policies, but, you know, very religious conservative colleges do have pretty aggressive rules on, you know, who you can see. You can't, you know, boys can't be in the women's dorms past a certain time period. You have to have supervised dates, that kind of thing. So it's really funny that that liberal universities are now kind of adopting the same thing for different reasons.
That's funny.
What I'm understanding is that, so I, you know, I was mostly talking about the Ivy League, liberal arts colleges, coastal campuses. My understanding is that there are in America's heartland, in the South, you know, less explicitly political institutions, community colleges. I think those look much more like normal. And in fact, not all of those have required vaccination even. And I don't think they're taking masking to the same level of seriousness. So again, it's not every campus on earth, but it should concern us that the most influential campuses, the campuses whose graduates go on to become the most influential to our society, are implementing the most brutally repressive anti-COVID regime anywhere on this planet.
Well, yeah, it should concern us, especially because where they go, other colleges may well follow. But Robbie, I think we'll round out the conversation there, the serious portion, but we do have to get your second take, your second chance around for the controversial food take. But first, remind us what your first one was.
Well, I don't remember what my first one was. It was probably just about how I like plain food. Honestly, I think I've said this before. I think I would be known for my bad food takes if you did not exist, because yours are worse than mine. But there are some overlaps, definitely. My new one, so I have a good one.
Okay.
This is actually the only kind of weird food, or like food that is often not popular or actually even hated that I happen to like a lot. I am a big fan of Hawaiian pizza, of the ham and pineapple pizza.
Yeah, I don't hate that, but some people do.
People really hate it. I love it. Yeah, had some last night.
All right, Robbie, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.